Greer. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. Here's McHugh. Oh,
hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jane Buster, we'll look back on the impressive 3-1 victory over Dundee, we'll assess the transfer window from a Motherwell perspective, and we'll analyse how the team are shaping up heading into the international break. Guys, welcome along.
Cheers.
Jay, last week we talked about the importance of 3 points ahead of the Dundee game, and yesterday the players delivered just that, a very good performance. And another significant point of our season, we thought that the cup victory over Livingston was a step in the right direction. We backed that up with a good, hard-earned point against Rangers and then get the first win of the season yesterday against Dundee. We can go into that break fairly satisfied.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we kind of spoke last week about how important the game was yesterday in terms of fixtures coming up. And although we were all feeling really good about that late point against Rangers, it was still only 1 point so far this season. So it was vital to get our first win of the season. And I thought we did it, you know, it was brilliantly. I thought it was a really good performance. Obviously a fantastic result. It would have been nice to keep a clean sheet, but a 3-1 still a really good result. But yeah, I think the performance is the main thing. I know Stephen Robinson has obviously went out his way to highlight the performance in his post-match comments in terms of how we don't get a lot of credit when we play good football because everybody's so obsessed with the sort of the hammer throwers tag. But yeah, I thought it was perhaps not the electrifying performance that Robinson was maybe alluding to, but I thought it was a good one. Plenty of times you had both Hartley and Aldred picking up the ball on the left and right of that back three, and instead of maybe, you know, just launching it forward to where Curtis Main or Danny Johnson were, which perhaps would have been our tactic last season or perhaps even earlier this season, instead of that they were continually looking to play the ball along in the deck to the, you know, one of the midfielders or Tate or Cadden out wide, and that was really encouraging to see. So it was a good team performance, lots of good individual performances all over the pitch. The only player I think had a hard day at the office was or a bad day at the office was perhaps Chrissy Cadden, who was obviously really frustrated when he came off, but it was the right change at the right time by Robinson. And overall, I thought we could be really positive about it. You know, we fully deserved the win. We dominated the first half in particular. And apart from a little spell during, you know, a 5-10 minute spell during which Dundee scored and then Carson pulled off a great save to keep us in it. Although anybody who's watched the Motherwell highlights, the MFC TV highlights, might, you know, find it a bit confusing because I think the actual Motherwell highlights have Carson save before the Dundee goal, and from memory it was the other way about.
But I actually brought that up with Grant just before we started. Ah, right. I watched back the highlights after watching Sports Scene and saw that I'd watched the highlights last night, and I was sure that it hadn't happened at 2-0. Because I can remember being very, very relieved when he made the save. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that that's been cleared up there.
Yeah, because at the time, I think we all kind of said that it was as important as a goal. You know, that save, because it had kept it at 2-1. So I did notice that in the Motherwell highlights, but I was sure, I'm glad you've said that, because I was, just in case I was going a bit mad, but I was sure that that had happened, you know, in that order. But apart from that 5-10 minute spell, I thought we were very comfortable. We saw the game out well at 3-1, and it was just a very, very decent performance and something to build on going forward.
Buster, Jay talked about that 5-10 minute spell that Dundee had, but I struggled to think of many easier victories away from home in the league. It was very comfortable throughout. I was surprised and somewhat disappointed we didn't go into the break ahead. After the break, we made our momentum pay. We took our chances and we were very clinical at times, but it was a good 3 points. You normally say you wouldn't take anything away from the opposition. I would take a lot away from the opposition who were very, very poor.
Yeah, it was one of those days before, you know, sorry, as half-time came around, you know, I thought we completely dominated the match. I don't think Trevor Carlson had anything to do that wasn't given to him by, you know, Tom Aldred, Peter Hartley, Carol McHugh. other than collect maybe, you know, through balls that went too long. But it was one of those days at half time you were thinking, we've dominated here, we've not taken any chances though, so, you know, this could come back to bite us in the bum. But as you say, you know, yesterday I was sort of pretty critical of Chris Cadden. You know, I thought he was getting nowhere. And you've seen it himself, he was frustrated. I think he punched or kicked the side of the dugout and it made a wee bit of a din when he did. But, you know, the manager spotted that as well, made the change at the right time. And, you know, a couple of minutes later, Freer got down the wing, put the ball in. Defender made a bit of a mistake and Johnson put it in the goal and that was it. But, as you say, I don't think Dundee threatened much at all. They had the ball for maybe 5-10 minutes. One chance they got and they scored. I don't remember Trevor Carson touching the ball any other time. The only sort of negative for ourselves, I would say, was during that 5-10 minute spell, the defence did look a bit shaky. I don't know why or what happened, but you know they sort of seemed as if they were on the verge of crumbling. I've never seen such a poor Dundee. Even, you know, when we beat them there before, I never thought they were as bad as they were yesterday. And again, Stephen Robinson and Jay touched on there. I thought some of the football we played was brilliant. You know, Jay mentioned obviously we'd maybe usually go long in those situations, but I think having a guy like Biggie in the team gives us that option. I don't know how many times has, you know, Hartley, Aldred, or MD just knocked it into the centre where Biggie was standing. He had 10 yards of space and he'd maybe make a pass, go get it again. Even, you know, Cad and Tate as well in the wings, you know, they would do the exact same and Biggie would be coming across and, you know, making the wee triangles there for the passes. So it was a well-deserved 3 points and hopefully, you know, that'll really kick our season on for here.
You mentioned Cadden and the reaction after being substituted. For me, that's quite a positive thing. He obviously was very frustrated at his performance. Obviously disappointed as well to come off. He's not a player that is often hooked. He's not a player that, as I think I've ever seen, given anything but 100% in a Motherwell jersey. Is that one to write off as a bad day at the office?
For me, it's a bit of a worry, to be honest with you. I love Chrissy Cadden, you know, and as Stevie Robinson says, he leaves his heart on that park. You know, he puts in everything, he'll run through a brick wall for you. But he's in a weird position where I'm not sure if right wing back's, you know, a good position for him. I don't know where his position is. I don't think maybe he or Stevie Robinson know where his best position is. The midfield, again, it's somebody we've not mentioned yet, Andy Rose, I thought was absolutely brilliant yesterday as well at points, making wee tackles here and there, interceptions here and there. Andy Rose, Biggie, and Alan Campbell, again, you know, we could talk all day about Alan Campbell. That midfield for me right now is perfect. It's working absolutely brilliantly. So I don't know where Cadden really fits in here. And it's kind of a shame because, you know, he's a fan's favourite because he would do anything for the club. You know, he might not have grew up a Motherwell fan. I don't know. Probably didn't he? You know, no in Lanarkshire. But, you know, he's been at the club for a while and it's clear that he cares about the club. And he's one of the guys who you want to see do really well, but I think he's don't get me wrong, he's you know, yesterday he struggled really badly and I don't think it's like every week, but I just think there's a weird, I don't think he's a wing back basically, that's what I'm trying to get at, but I don't know where he would play.
Plus I mentioned the unsung heroes, guys like Andy Rose, but a guy that's going to grab plenty of the headlines, Jay, is Danny Johnson, who continues to find the net. Another goal yesterday after a first half where he, at times I thought was maybe trying too hard, shooting from some strange angles, maybe not getting his head up in time. But when that ball broke to him 8 yards out after the Dundee defender almost slipped right in front of him, he put it away nicely and it continues his nice streak where he's now scored in 3 successive Saturdays.
Yeah, he offers us something a wee bit different from the main salmon partnership that we seem to be persisting the first couple of weeks of the season. Although that of course, is probably partly to do with the fact that I don't think Robinson felt that Johnson was perhaps fully fit, fully match fit, or up to speed after pre-season. Probably still doesn't, because I don't know if he's yet to see out 90 minutes. But yeah, I just think he offers us something different. He's tricky. He's quick. He looks as though he's a real handful for attackers, and I think he's forming a good partnership up there with Main. When we did kind of go with the aerial balls forward on occasion, it was quite obvious that the intention was to try and get Main to get little flicks on to get Johnson in behind. So it's good to have that option. It's good that he's obviously hit the ground running. We've spoke before at how difficult it can be for strikers the longer they go without scoring. Alex Fisher last season being the perfect example. So the fact that he's taking his chance, he's scored goals, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon, is great for us. And again, it's just something to be positive about. I think if hindsight's a wonderful thing, but I think if you'd started that Accies game, which admittedly would be dominated but ultimately lost, if you'd started that Accies game with the kind of lineup that we've played with yesterday and against Rangers, I think we would have won that. So that's something to perhaps look at positively rather than negatively moving forward, because we do have a what looks like a settled strongest 11 at the moment. In saying that, I do tend to agree with Busta. I think I'm perhaps not quite as harsh on Chrissy Cadden as Busta is. I think he's done well at right wing back and offers us quite a lot. But I do think yesterday he had a particularly bad day at the office, and it just coincides with Elliot Freer having two impressive games in a row from the bench. So I wouldn't be against the idea of perhaps Tait over to the right and Freer getting a start moving forward, because I think he's earned it over the last couple of weeks. But other than that, I think you're starting to see a steady, quite solid starting 11, and Johnson's a massive part of that, particularly because Curtis Main is struggling to hit the net at the moment. Obviously, I think it will come. I don't think there's any doubt that Main will get on the score sheet sooner rather than later. But when Main's not contributing with goals, it's fantastic that Johnson's hit the ground running and is making up for it.
And Busta, another great goal for Gael Big-Romana. Not another great goal, a great goal for Gael Big-Romana. It's almost becoming a weekly segment in this podcast where we talk about him. At the start of the season, he wasn't getting the game time we thought he deserved. He's then been given his opportunity in the team, and ever since that game against Hamilton, he's been a staple part of our side, and I would say he's been the best player in our team as well. A brilliant performance again yesterday, capped off with a great free kick to put us 2-0 ahead. There's maybe not much to add to that, but he certainly has had a fantastic start to this season.
Yep, as I said, basically he wants the ball, and you can see him when he goes to get the ball, whether or not he gets it, he makes 5-10 yards of space. And it could be a simple matter of he gets the ball off one of the centre halves and just gives them it back, but he always gives somebody that wee option there, and his deliveries as well are have been fantastic over the last couple of weeks. When he signed last season, everybody was sort of delighted. I think mainly because he was the only one we'd really heard of. He had a wee bit of pedigree. We know a couple of guys who follow Coventry, Joe, who's on this regularly, and Marty. So they were bigging him up as well, but it obviously never really worked out. You've seen his interview in the cafe, and again, he's been absolutely fantastic. He just looks like such an infectious wee person. I mean, I don't know how he could be unhappy, to be honest with you. He certainly never looks unhappy. But he's a great wee player, and long may that continue. He's been absolutely fantastic.
Jay, what I would consider a major talking point from yesterday that has been massively overlooked was the aftermath of a nasty clash between Alan Campbell and Dundee's Lewis Spence. Spence clearly came off second best in a challenge and looked to have suffered a nasty head knock. I initially actually thought he was out cold, but what would happen is he would receive treatment at the on the pitch for a few minutes, then was taken off to the side of the pitch opposite the Dundee dugout. Their doctor seemed to indicate that there was no chance that he could play on, and given the way he went off the park, that seemed like common sense. It didn't look like he was in any state to continue playing in that match. Neil McCann clearly had different ideas, and moments later, the player's back on the pitch. From the stands, it looked very much like Neil McCann demanded the Lewis Spence went back onto that park, there's been a lot of coverage about concussion in sport in recent times. Mother obviously got experience of that firsthand from Carol McHugh suffering a dreadful head knock at Kilmarnock a couple of years ago. I'm struggling to find any case for the defence in terms of McCann here. It was reckless, it was stupid, and we can only be thankful that the circumstances or the outcome of what McCann appears to have done here wasn't more serious.
No, I think you're spot on. It was disgraceful. I think anybody who was there and who was keeping an eye on what was going on, particularly from the away end, because you've got that vantage point where we were, you could obviously see Neil McCann on one side of the park, you could see the boy Spence and the physio on the other side of the park. So you could see quite clearly that the player was struggling. He signalled to McCann at first, once he'd kind of regained consciousness, that he had to come off. The physio made it clear that he had to come off. And McCann, you know, almost like had a hissy fit and clearly motioned that the player had to come on. Now, obviously, at that stage, Neil McCann had used these three substitutes. They were trailing the game. And, of course, he's thinking that he's got a job to keep. I'm not sure if Dundee had perhaps already won a game this season or were not in the position they were in, would he have put the player's well-being first? I think possibly he might have. I think maybe the fact he's under pressure and he's trying to keep his job. But that's no excuse. It's unacceptable. It's a disgrace. And I can't believe that it's not been mentioned. It's obviously not even been mentioned in match reports, but the fact that there's no even a story on it, because this to me is a news story. As you said, concussion and head knocks are such a big, big thing at the moment. There's a lot of emphasis placed on them, particularly the idea that if you get a bad head knock and then follow up with another bad head knock, your life can be put at risk. And, you know, everybody goes on about how weird the hammer throwers and we go about elbowing folk and stuff like that. So the idea that Neil McCann, against this bunch of physical hammer throwers, would demand that Spence comes back onto the park, despite the fact that he looked quite clearly out of the game, it was a really bad head knock, he should have been nowhere near the pitch. I'm at an absolute loss as to why no, you know, football journalist in Scotland has picked this up. I don't know whether it's because Rangers are playing Celtic today, so nobody, you know, gives a toss what was going on out with Celtic Park. I don't know whether it's because Neil McCann's a former pundit, and so he's just, you know, he's quite friendly with most media, Scottish media personnel. I just don't know what it is, but to me, that's a story. Neil McCann has put a player's well-being very clearly, behind his priority of keeping his job. It's unacceptable, it's a disgrace, and if Peter Hartley can get investigated by the compliance officer for his misguided comments in a press conference, then surely, managers have a duty of care to their players. To override the decision of the physio and demand that a player who's had a serious head knock and looks as though he should be in hospital getting checked, if you demand he comes onto the park, then that to me is unacceptable. And, you know, I can't believe that the only people really talking about it are Motherwell and Dundee fans on the likes of forums and social media.
But I did a wee bit of checking up, one with a coach of another football club in one of the top leagues, and also a representative of Motherwell, as to what the protocol is for head knocks at their clubs. And both the responses were absolutely identical. The doctor has the final say. Now, as I've mentioned already, McCann was at the opposite end in the dugout, and Spence and the Dundee doctor were at the opposite end in front of the cowshed at Dens Park. There is no way they could have had a conversation in any sort of detail across a pitch of whatever width it is, given there was 5,000 people inside the stadium. There is no way that there was a conversation between McCann and the Dundee doctor. The Dundee doctor appears to have indicated that Spence can't continue. Why has Neil McCann went against a professional medical expert at the detriment of his own player? We could be sitting here talking about something so much more serious. It's incredibly, incredibly careless. It's incredibly dismissive of a duty to a duty of care as well. I'm trying to... We're obviously sitting here and it's not... The outcome has been okay, or as far as we know, it's okay. But there's no getting away from how disgraceful Neil McCann's actions have been here.
I don't think there's any question on, you know, the club doctor or physio's indication. You know, to take it back to the start, as we've already done, just a quick wee summary of what I've seen. The guy went head-to-head with Alan Campbell. Two of them went down. Alan Campbell went down for 20 seconds, got up rubbing the side of his head. The Dundee player was lying on the floor, and while I can only assume he was sort of semi-conscious, immediately started, you know, doing the substitution signal with his hands. He was then treated on the park for quite a while, and he was stood up and led off the park in the same manner that you would, you know, if when you're 20-year-old and your mates had that much to drink that he can't walk. A person either side of him, you know, he's got their hands over their shoulder and he's staggering off the park. He then, you know, stood with the doctor. The doctor, in my opinion, clearly indicated he was done, no coming back. Now, at this point, I turned around and I said to, I think it was UG, I said to the doctor's saying that he's not to continue. They've used all the subs, they'll be doing it 10 men. And at that point, you pointed out Neil McCann had just went mental. I don't understand then what happened, because he was sent to go for a jog up and down the sideline, and then suddenly just reappeared and floated about the rest of the game like a balloon. He just bobbed about that park.
It was so obvious that he was no longer in the game at all.
There was one point he received a throw-in and it went to him at head height, and he went back as if somebody kicked the ball off his head. Went to him at head height, and then as he went to him, he headed it back. It hit him in the head and he went back as if it... I don't know, I think that was just a unexpected height of the throw, but still, it looked incredibly dodgy. You know, and then I think, I'd have to look at it again a bit closer, but I think, to be fair, you know, Campbell was his man and they lost a third goal, probably because, again, he was floating about like a balloon, no knowing what was happening, because he seemed to just stick by Alan Campbell's side for the rest of the game on his own. But... I you know that I follow the NFL, and concussion is a massive thing in the NFL. And if you've ever watched any of the documentaries, or even I think Will Smith's in a film, there's an early Mull link actually with Will Smith. Will Smith is in a film about concussion that's based on a true story, and some of the injuries and the stories and these guys who have got the CTE that comes with concussions they receive, some of the stories are horrific, and it's insane to think that somebody would overwrite is the right word. I'm getting confused here because I just can't believe that he was allowed to stay on that park. Even the referee, in my opinion, should have been like, what is happening here? Go and sit down and have a think about this. But it was honestly one of the worst things I've seen in football.
We've got to be careful here because of the fact that it's not been reported, no one has went to McCann and asked him these questions. So we're surmising on what we saw and how we see the incident. There's obviously a risk involved in us committing stuff to recorded audio that we believe that McCann was guilty here. There might be another side to the story, and I'm being a bit responsible here by just kind of conveying that point. But By that element, I still completely agree with both of your takes on it. I think it was reprehensible, and I really think that was the actions of a man so desperate he was willing to put his own duty of care to one side for the so-called benefit of the side. And as you say, Buster, sending him back on wasn't going to benefit Dundee in any sort of way at all. If Lewis Spence remembers the last 15 minutes of that game yesterday, I'd be very, very surprised.
If right, let's say, for example, then Neil McCann didn't order him to get back on, we're out of order saying that. Let's say that. That's certainly, as far as we're aware, what we think happened. Let's say that didn't happen. Now, it was clear to everybody in the stands that boy shouldn't be playing. So Neil McCann, the referee, in my opinion, the club doctor told him he's no playing. But, you know, these people should stop the game and be like, what is happening here? You know, People's safety obviously comes first, no matter what you're doing. And I'd like to think that if somebody broke their arm, the bone was poking out of their arm, and they said, "No, I want to play," the ref obviously would send them to the changing room, get it strapped up or whatever. You know, the ref, in my opinion as well, has got to come under a wee bit of scrutiny, because fair do, see, you know, the game's going on, whatever. But the ref would have seen him getting carried off. He'd have seen him floating about the park for the rest of the game. So even if we're saying Neil McCann was not the one who ordered this player to come back onto the park, Neil McCann, the ref, the club doctors, the physio, whoever
the fourth official, what is that guy's job? Because he's observing it from an outsider's point of view. He must be aware of what McCann was saying. So maybe there could be a bit of clarification from whoever the fourth official was yesterday.
It was Celtic Rangers the day, though. We'll never hear of this again. Don't worry about that.
He brought the end of the transfer window in Scotland, and there was a fair bit of activity across the country, despite the fact there wasn't any incomings or outgoings at Fir Park. Jay, Stephen Robinson did his business fairly early on in the window, and over the course he's brought in Mark Gillespie, Liam Donnelly, Danny Johnson, Aaron Taylor Sinclair, Alex Rodriguez-Gorin, Christian Mbulu, and also Tom Aldred and Connor Salmon were brought in loan. In terms of outgoings, there was only one, really, and it was a major one in the loss of Cedric Kiepre to Wigan. How would you assess the business done over the window? Some guys have come in and only made sparing appearances. Danny Johnson's obviously got off to a great start. It's been a bit of a mixed bag.
Yeah, I mean, it always is. You know, you're not going to get the 100% hit rate, particularly, you know, when we're having to make things happen. We can't go just identify top targets and go and pay the money involved. We need to obviously take gambles at times. I think it's a hard one to assess because of the way the gaffer's approached it. He made very clear over the summer that his take on the transfer dealings would be about almost strengthening the bench, you know, kind of just increasing the numbers of decent players rather than looking to necessarily improve certain areas. So I don't know how you really evaluate that other than to look back at the end of the season and see how the squad as a whole has kind of performed, because none of the players that he's perhaps signed were necessarily signed for the starting lineup, other than perhaps Aldred. So it's, you know, it's just interesting to see how it pans out. I think overall, I don't really have too many concerns. I've obviously spoke in the past about Connor Salmon. I think he'll contribute, you know, the odd goal. He did well when he came on yesterday. I think he kind of nullified the game a little bit, put his body about. He obviously was very quick thinking for Biggie's quick free kick that led to Campbell's goal. That said, I wouldn't have brought him in on loan. You know, so perhaps, you know, that's maybe a negative, perhaps, including when you kind of look at the way that a lot of Motherwell fans have reacted to it. But other than that, I think we've got strength and depth. We're kind of seeing that at the moment. We're done missing out. You know, we do miss his pace, but we've managed to cope well with Aldred, Hartley and McHugh back there. We've got a settled midfield with options to fill in. You know, should anything happen in terms of injury suspensions. We're sitting talking here about perhaps Cadden dropping out and Freer coming in. You've got ATS on the bench as well. And then obviously up front, you have options with Bowman back fit now as well. So I think the early signs are good. The early signs that Robbo's objective of strengthening the squad as a whole and maybe increasing the numbers of you know, half-decent players has perhaps come to fruition. It's looking that way, certainly. But that's the kind of thing I don't think you can really assess over the, you know, the last few weeks. If he had been setting out to, you know, improve the quality of the starting 11, then we would maybe be a few games in and you could comment on that. But I think because his objectives seem to be to strengthen the squad overall, that's something we're really not going to know until we maybe hit a, you know, a patch of poor form or there's injuries and suspensions that need dealt with. So it'll just be interesting to see. But overall, it's went well. And then when you factor in somebody like Biggie, who almost feels like a new signing, that obviously just kind of makes things even better.
And of course, Buster, we did lose Cedric Kiepre, a massive part of our squad last season, a massive part of our success last season. But I think what we have done is we've maintained the core of our squad. Guys like Trevor Carson, Chris Cadden, that there was maybe question marks over whether the future would be at Fir Park beyond the end of August. That is going to be the case, and
for me, that can only be a positive.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, as you say, you know, Cedric was he seemed to be a massive personality as well. So, as you say, he's a big part of the squad, big part of the first team as well. And, you know, looking forward here, maybe, you know, getting excited, getting ahead of myself, but he's down there doing really, really well. So let's hope that continues for your benefit as well, hopefully. I think the only thing I'm surprised by, and I would probably go as far and guess it as far as guessing the club, maybe the player himself, are surprised by is that Trevor Carson is still here. In my opinion, Mark Gillespie was signed to be the number one. I think we thought we'd maybe receive a few offers, and I think that the English transfer deadline being, you know, the 9th of August or whatever it was, has maybe put a wee bit of kibosh on that. So, you know, I think to be fair, not that I'm not delighted he's still here, to be fair, but I think it's that's the one that surprises. ATS was obviously brought in as a left back. Elliot Freer falls in there at times. Sometimes he does well, sometimes he doesn't. Richard Tate seems to be able to play left or right, no bother. So you just say there is a bit of depth there as well. Danny Johnson looks like he'll go straight into the first team. Probably be a top goal scorer this year. But as you say, you know, there's one or two others who will probably kick about the bench, get the odd start here and there. And it's up to them to prove that they, you know, they can maybe oust somebody for the first team and go on and do well for us.
Buzz has kind of answered or went on to answer my next question there, Jay. Mark Gillespie has come in, and I think it was yourself I was talking to as he warmed up at half time yesterday. It must be a bit of a surprise and a shock to a goalkeeper that had played that many games before coming into Fir Park to be sidelined at quite an important part of his career as well. But then you look at the save from Paul McGowan at 2-1 yesterday, and you see exactly why Trevor Carson is so highly thought of amongst the Motherwell support, and possibly a large percentage of the Motherwell support expected them to move on because he's that good.
Yeah, I think out of all the players at the club, I think Carson was perhaps the one that we definitely thought would be moving on, and I think we should all be, you know, thankful that it perhaps didn't come to fruition, particularly because of, you know, the good example of that save. It was a fantastic save with his leg, to, you know, and who knows what happens if that goes in. They get, you know, that added positivity, the momentum is with them, and suddenly we maybe sit back and start panicking. So that was a massive save. As I said earlier, it was as good as a goal in the context of the match. In terms of Gillespie, you know, Gillespie may have been under the impression, or the club may have been under the impression, that Gillespie was coming to be number one. But when Gillespie signed, Carson was still here. And so you can't really rely on, you know, you can't be sitting there assuming that someone's going to come in and bid money for your goalkeeper. So Gillespie, for the time being, is just going to have to bide his time. And if he gets his opportunity, take it. I mean, there's still a few years in between them in terms of ages. They talk about it. Football Manager talks about how goalkeepers peak, you know, around about 30, 31, which Carson, you know, now is. Gillespie, I believe, is still only about 26. So he's still got a lot of years left in the game. So I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, whether Robbo and Keith are perhaps maybe, you know, having a word with Gillespie and just letting him know that he's here for the long term and seen as the long term replacement for Carson or what. But at the end of the day, Gillespie shouldn't have been coming here assuming that he was going to be number one, because regardless of what was maybe expected or hoped for Carson, Carson was absolutely our number one when Gillespie came in. So the fact that he still is, you know, shouldn't be a massive surprise, because it's all very well having a sellable asset, but you still need somebody to come in and put the money in, and you can't really rely on that.
As a listener to the MSC podcast, we'd like to thank you for listening with the help of our friends at beer52.com. You just need to head over to beer52.com/MFC to claim your free case. Beer52 is the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club, searching out incredible and exclusive small batch craft beers from the world's greatest breweries, and they then bring them back for their members. As a listener to our show, you can try your first case for free. All you need to do is pay the $2.95 postage and packaging. That's 8 incredible craft beers, Ferment magazine and a snack delivered the very next day.
There's no minimum commitment. You just take the free case, try the beers and see what you think. If it's not for you, you can pause or cancel at any time. Beer 52 is a 5-star rating in Trustpilot, so it's easy to see that their members love the service. Head on over to Beer 52, that's beer and the numbers 5 and 2.com /MFC today. Buster, we head into the international break now, having played 4 league games, having advanced to the quarterfinals of the Betfred League Cup. It was obviously a difficult start to the season, 2 defeats, but the team have bounced back very well. A good result against Livingston, the draw against Rangers, and then an excellent performance at Dens Park yesterday. It's been an impressive recovery by Stephen Robinson and the playing staff, who came under a fair degree of criticism after these opening 2 defeats.
Yeah, I think the criticism was at times warranted. I think me and myself, and probably you guys as well, were pretty critical of the way we played. I think I remember asking about, you know, is the 3-5-2, is that the way to go? It appears as though just by a few tweaks here and there, you know, it's starting to work for us again. So, you know, that's obviously pleasing to see. And you know, it's best to maybe get these things out the way early. You know, if you are going to have a wee bit of poor form, get it out of the way and hope that, we're not going to go undefeated, basically. You know, we're going to get beat, we're going to be poor at times, but at least we know exactly how to correct that if needed. As you say, we've a couple of decent results there. We've an international break, and then after that, we've got 3 or 4 even harder results. So that's harder fixtures. So that's something we're all looking forward to. But it's good to see that they actually did, bounce back, so to speak. So, you know, hopefully we can kick on for you.
I think that's a good point, Jay. The style of football has improved as well over the course of the month of August and then into the first day of September yesterday at Dens Park. That's a big thing, because as good as it is going away from home and getting a good result, a good performance, even when results aren't so good, can lift your spirits and can make you think that the good times are going to come fairly soon. After that Aki's defeat particularly, it was hard not to be fairly demoralised. So for a 3-week turnaround, I think that's been a very impressive element.
Yeah, I mean, it was an enjoyable game. That was it. It wasn't just an enjoyable result. It was an enjoyable performance. We were dominant. We played good football, as we've spoke about earlier. Created chances. Got the ball down. As I said, Aldred and Hartley were often the sort of starting attacks by getting the ball down and playing it into the midfield. I thought all three midfielders were absolutely different class. And I think it just shows you what kind of happens, you know, even just with, I don't know how much it's a conscious thing. I don't know how much maybe Robinson has said, right, we're no longer shit-festing games, we're no longer going long ball, we're going to try and get the ball down. Or whether it's just the sort of the natural progression as soon as you've got Danny Johnson up front and Biggie in the centre of midfield. You know, when you've got a striker up front who wants the ball at his feet or wants balls in behind but not to his head, and you've got a midfielder in Biggie who, let's be honest, what is the point in him being on the park if you're just going to launch the ball over his head? So I don't know whether it's a deliberate or a conscious plan to adapt the style of football, or whether it's just naturally progressed that way because of the changes to the starting lineup. But either way, it was really good to watch at times. I think, you know, the last 10-15 minutes, I think we kind of resorted to type, you know, long balls to Bowman and Salmon, and it was all about just kind of seeing out the game at that stage. But I think particularly that first half, lots of good sort of triangles, one-touch passing and moving, trying to get the ball down the flanks and into the box, balls into feet. I just thought it was, you know, really good to watch at times. And it is encouraging, because if it's something we look to implement, perhaps not every week, there will be games that perhaps that is, you know, to our advantage to turn up and maybe go long or try and turn it into a bit of a shit fest or be overly physical. But I think when there's a chance to play good football and play to the strengths of guys like Johnson and Biggie, then you're going to reap your rewards like we did yesterday. And it was also a reminder that somebody like Alan Campbell, who, you know, is great to watch in terms of being, you know, a wee midfield terrier and getting tore in and putting in the tackles, but he's also a very good footballer. You know, he's really good with the ball at his feet. We saw him obviously get a goal with a really good finish, took it well. So I think the way we played on Saturday kind of suits him as well, because he can, you know, sort of deploy both of those sides of his game and get involved, you know, in the attacking sense as well as getting stuck in.
Yeah, and that's it. It's hard always, as I mentioned, pretty much every time we go into a break of a couple of weeks to preview the next game. We're going to do a podcast with Alan Burrows in between, but there won't be much focus on our next fixture, which is Hearts at Fir Park. Buster, we'll briefly mention it, going into a game against a side that have won all four of their fixtures so far in the league. They've breezed through in the Betfred Cup as well. A very tough test for us, and a test against a side that will be absolutely brimming with confidence coming to Fir Park.
Yeah, you see, you know, they've not put a foot wrong basically this season so far. Also, you know, the fact they've won every one of their games, and one of them includes Celtic, is, you know, to be applauded. For some reason, you know, on the back of a good victory there and a great performance, you know, I don't think we'll get anything to fear. But when I've only seen bits of Hearts, but the boy, I think his name starts with a U, kind of mind. The big guy that plays up front for him, he looks a handful. He looks as if he'll be a very useful player for Hearts. And again, as I said, it's Hearts. It's always going to be difficult, but it's the league game, fair enough. Cup game, that's MD's. Basically, you know, they've been absolutely fantastic. So fair play to them, but maybe that's one where we all revert to trying to kick the... I don't know, to be fair. It's going to be hard. Stevie Naismith scored a hat-trick, obviously, at the weekend as well. So it's something to look forward to, but it'll be a difficult, difficult game for us, I think.
Yeah, the striker's name's Ushe... Is it Ikpizu? I'm pretty sure that's the guy you're talking about. But thanks very much for getting me to try and pronounce that.
Appreciate Pizu, I'll give you that. That'll do, yeah. He looks a handful. I've not seen any of the highlights from the weekend.
Oh, yet, I can't even remember his name. Very good.
Aye, that's it.
Jay, obviously, in a more serious note, Craig Levine suffering from some health issues. He's expected to be back in the dugout. It didn't seem to hamper Hearts in any way yesterday in their 4-1 victory over St Mirren. I think first and foremost, you've got to wish Levine a speedy recovery, but hope that his time away from the training field and in preparation in the lead up to the match might hamper Hearts somewhat.
I doubt that. I don't think it will be, you know, there'll be any great effect on it. I think you know, the loss of Kyle Lafferty would have been seen as a far bigger impact on any performance, and they obviously dealt with that very, very easily. With obviously Stephen A. Smith chipping in with the goals, as Buster says. So no, I don't think Levine, you know, having been missed for a few weeks, will have any bearing on the game whatsoever. It'll be a really difficult one. You know, it's one of those ones where I think could really go both ways. You look at Hearts, the results they've had so far this season, and they've dished out, you know, trouncings. You know, against Accies and St Mirren, the kind of teams that you'd expect to be down that bottom end of the table, and they've kind of scraped wins, you know, against Celtic and Killy, both, you know, massive game, you know, great results for them. But you know, if we can keep things tight at the back, and you know, do what we need to do in that area of the field, you know, I don't know if they're quite, you know, they're not free scoring unless they're playing against the kind of teams that I think we would want to score goals against as well. So, you know, I could see both sides. I think it's the kind of the game where if we are not at our best and Hearts, you know, turn up and really turn it on, then it will be, you know, even just getting a point would be a fantastic result. But when you look at the way we've played the last couple of weeks, when you look at the way we went toe-to-toe with, you know, a Rangers side with Kyle Lafferty in it, you know, I think we can be confident, and it's, you know, it's at Fir Park. We've got, you know, we're on a little bit, you know, it's not quite a run from the start of the season, but I think things are looking up for us now. We've got momentum, we've got confidence, So we can get into that game with you know, just as much confidence as Hearts can. And, you know, actually on paper, it could be a really, really good game, and one that, you know, I don't think we should be too fearful of. I think it's a game that we should look to get something from, based on what we've done the last couple of weeks.
It's a bit of a standard question, but does the break come at a wrong time, given our three impressive results in the last
three
weeks?
I think it's one of those ones where, you know, I think it's always easy to say yes. You know, you've got that last minute equaliser against Rangers. You've went to Dens Park and won comfortably. Would it be great to get into the game the following week? Very possibly. But you know, that the international break always brings with it some positives as well. You know, in terms of, you know, I know Tanner and Dunn are a little bit away yet, but if there's any knocks around the team, I know Robinson had mentioned before the game on Saturday that Carroll McHugh had a wrist injury but was still expected to play, so anything in terms of fitness or any wee niggles and things like that allows us that extra week to get over those. So I think, you know, a simplistic way of looking at it is perhaps to say, you know, the old cliche that it comes at the wrong time because we've got that momentum. But I think you can always make those international weekends work for you in other ways.
Busta, as we go into the break, you kind of have a wee glance at the table for the first time, and it shows you a wee bit of significance, I suppose. It's still very, very early doors. 7 points for Livingston, a fantastic start for them. But more importantly, Dundee remain in 0 points. Ourselves, we've got four, only a point behind Rangers, who, if you believe the hype going into today's game, were on a real momentum train and were about to take over the world. It turns out they've only picked up 5 points from a possible 12. Are you pretty happy with the sum of our parts as we head into what will be a tough run of fixtures? You've got Hearts at home, then that's followed up by trips to Aberdeen and then Kilmarnock. So difficult games ahead, and we will have to pick up the points given we didn't manage to do so in the first 2 weeks of the season.
Am I happy with where we're sitting? I think we should be 3 points better off than that, to be honest with you. But the Hamilton game aside, I think we've done well to turn it around. You know, as I say, I think Hamilton themselves, I think they've only got points from us, so you know they could be in a similar situation to Dundee if we had turned up and, in my opinion, tried to play football that day when we didn't. We tried to do the sort of usual shit fest thing. So I think we could be better off, but to see us come back and change it up a wee bit, you know, maybe I don't think you know, for example, giving Biggie a go in the team, when he featured so little during the sort of pre-season in the Betfred games, you know, to see him actually start the last two games and be the main man basically, it's brilliant. So I think we could be better off, but it's, you know, we're certainly facing the right direction.
Yeah, I think you're right. I would maybe say 6 points would have been fairly realistic expectations. We're missed out on that by 2 points. You'd maybe expect to beat Accies at home. Dens Park's always a tough place to go, mind you. Easter Road, Rangers at home. I suppose 4 points isn't in any way a bad total, particularly given the first two defeats. So we are where we are, and let's hope we can push on. Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got for tonight.
Cool.
Thank you very much for your time. We'll be back during the week for the special with Alan Burrows, and then we will be back again following the Hearts game on the 15th of September. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back at the back end of this week. Until then, thank you and goodbye.
down the street.